The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, hi, everybody. Nice to see you all. So, I've been enjoying receiving the questions that people submit during the week. That's kind of fun. It's a new thing that I've tried to put this form out there to make it possible to participate through a written question. And it's been fun getting the questions. And I also will, I thought I'd start with one of the ones from the that was submitted online, and then see if there's any here. And there's two. There were two submitted. So, but they're both really great questions. And I was thinking about taking them in separate weeks. So we'll see how it goes. So the question that I thought I'd start with is, how can I be more mindful of the suffering of others? And I love this question because it really, it speaks to the heart that wants to be connected. It's addressing that that wish to have a connection with others. And that was the only sentence in the question, so there wasn't any elaboration. So I'm going to talk around it for a while, and hopefully it will touch on some of the pieces that this person had in their question. So how can I be more mindful of the suffering of others? To me, there's a couple of qualities that are they both support our capacity to be mindful of the suffering of others, and they are developed as we connect with the suffering of others. So it's kind of an interesting way in which these qualities, these two qualities that I'm thinking of right now, compassion and equanimity, that we can't expect to just have them right off the bat, and yet they do support us in connecting with others. So there's a way in which we maybe aspire to have equanimity and compassion in relationship to meeting the experience of others, and also a way in which we may begin to taste or touch into those qualities in our experience. And so I thought I'd speak a little bit about working with cultivating compassion and equanimity in relationship to the suffering of others. Now, to paradoxically, in some ways, there's different ways into this. There's different ways into how we can begin to open our hearts to the suffering of others. The more classical way is through using reflection practice, formal Brahmavihara practice, formal compassion practice, where we're actively calling up in our minds other people. And in particular, with compassion practice, we are calling up ways in which they are suffering. And so the proximate cause for compassion is said to be the sight of a helpless person in distress. That is a kind of a proximate cause for the quality of compassion to arise. And so the question is about mindfulness of the suffering of others, but I really feel like the quality of compassion is what allows us to be mindful of the suffering of others. Equanimity also supports that. The compassion quality is the quality that allows our heart to stay open when we are witnessing suffering, so that it doesn't contract or constrict. And the quality of equanimity is the quality that allows us to not kind of get lost in the suffering of others. Our mind can stay balanced even as it meets suffering. And so the kind of the classical way to cultivate compassion is to bring people into mind using reflection practice, bringing people into mind and reflecting on ways in which they might be suffering. And then expressing the wish, may you be free of that suffering. That is the compassion wish. May you be free of that suffering. So I think to some extent, being able to be mindful of the suffering of others means being able to be in touch with the suffering of others. That we don't shut down, that we don't turn our heads away or kind of turn inwards or feel in some way like they deserve it or that's not me. It's like, thank you, poor them, it's not me. And so the being mindful of the suffering of others means that our hearts stay open and can feel that others are suffering. That is the quality of compassion. The quality of compassion is the heart that when it meets the suffering of others, it actually resonates kind of in empathy with that suffering. Jack Kornfield calls compassion a kind of a quivering of the heart. And that's like the resonant quality, the quivering of the heart as it meets suffering. And so that this is one way to cultivate this connection is to look at how our minds are when we bring up, when we kind of consciously reflect on the fact that others suffer and wish them to be free of that suffering. The wish to be free, them to be free of that suffering is what the movement of compassion is. The compassion is a very active quality. It not only is open in connection with the suffering of others, it also wishes to act to alleviate that suffering. And so that wish, may you be free of this suffering, is that wish of compassion. So we can use reflection practice, and this could be formal. You could do it in a formal way. But I find there's a lot of opportunity for compassion practice in the world, especially like right now, you know, just reading the news. This is an opportunity for compassion practice. You know, can you take in? This is another human being that is being described in this article. This is another human being that is suffering. So sometimes, in reading about the suffering of others, we kind of create a distance or a separation. It's like, well, it's happening to them, it's not happening to me. And this breaking down of this barrier or breaking down of the sense that it's happening to someone else, it's not happening to me, that is part of the work of the compassion that we realize that whatever happens to someone else could also happen to me. You know, that it's circumstance that it's happening to someone else and not to me. And I think this is actually a really good time to be reflecting on just this kind of thing. Because this virus that we're all, you know, the entire planet is living with this virus right now. And we don't know the next person it's going to hit. The descriptions of people who are suffering and the healthcare workers that are really struggling to take care of the amount of people suffering, you know, these could be us. You know, we may be the next person to get the virus. We may die of this virus. You know, we don't know. And so to realize that the suffering of others, and this is another way to reflect on compassion and to open to and be mindful of the suffering of others, is to, in the taking in, this other person is suffering, to reflect, it might be me. It's not. I am not I am not immune from this kind of suffering. As a human being, I am subject to aging, to illness, to death. I am subject to separation from what is loved. We talked about this, I think, a few weeks ago. These reflections on impermanence, and there's a real connection between the impermanent nature of our lives, of our health, of our lives, of the things that the connection that we have with things that we love, and the suffering, because the loss of things that we love, the association with things that we don't want to be associated with, that's just the nature of being human. And that nature means that we will lose things. We will become sick. We will age. We will die. And so that some of that separation that happens when we're, you know, maybe not so able to be mindful of the suffering of others, I think comes because we're denying, not only are we denying that the other person, you know, oh, it's them, it's not me, but we're actually in ignorance and in denial of the truth of impermanent, unreliable for ourselves. And so this is another way in. And for me, this was actually the bigger way in, or the more natural way in. I think there's different ways people have to connect with not only the practice, but with specific aspects of the practice. So in particular around cultivating compassion, loving kindness, cultivating these Brahma Viharas. For some, there's a very direct connection or possibility with using this reflective practice and bringing to mind people and how they may be suffering, and that softens the heart and opens the heart. For me, that was very challenging. But another way into this is to, from the side of beginning to recognize our own mortality, our own the ways that we suffer, you know, that we kind of can connect. And for me, this was the way in, that I had a lot of trouble connecting initially with feeling that sense of empathy with others suffering. I mean, I could, but it was more like pity, or it wasn't and there was some aversion in there. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to see that, or there was a railing against the world. That's wrong. That's not the way it should be, as opposed to really acknowledging the truth. This is how it is, and the heart staying open. But as I started to meet my own experience, to look at my own experience and see the ways in which I suffer, you know, the ways in which this being gets all caught up and reactive and angry and confused and pain in the body, and beginning to see that is all conditioned. That's all nature. It is the nature of being human for these bodies to ache and the hearts to ache. And I began to kind of dawn on me through the practice, through being mindful of my own experience and being mindful of my own suffering, that this was the human condition. It wasn't about me. That the way that the Buddha encourages us to be aware, to be mindful of our own suffering, isn't a poor me kind of reflection. It's holding it with some balance of mind. And so this is bringing in the equanimity. The practice, for me, the practice of looking at my own suffering began cultivating the quality of equanimity, began cultivating that balance of mind that could be okay with suffering that was arising here, not rejecting it, not trying to fix it or change it, but just opening to, okay, this is what it's like to be a human being that's reactive right now, that's in pain right now, that hates what's happening right now. This is what it's like to be a human being that's experiencing the suffering. And something about that, began to kind of help me recognize that what was happening here, the reactivity that was happening here in this being, was not that different from what was going on in other people. And that began to soften my heart for other people. So that the touching into suffering here in this being began to allow my, through the recognition, this is conditioned, this isn't personal, this is, you know, the arising of this frustration, this anger, this bodily pain, this is the condition of being in a human body, this is the nature of being human. And with that, the mind began to kind of extrapolate in a way to recognize that the suffering that I was experiencing was not just mine. I remember so clearly one time I was seeing anger in my mind. I seeing the way anger worked and watching it come up. And then also seeing how the mind not only, you know, had that that feeling of being hurt by someone, but also wanted to hurt that person. There was a way in which I wanted the other person to suffer. And seeing that, you know, seeing how the mind actively wanted somebody else to suffer when I could feel my own suffering, that was humbling. But it also was kind of, was humbling for me, but it also helped me to understand, it's like, oh, this is not just the way my mind works. This is the way billions of minds work. And the war that's out there, the countries that are fighting with each other, you know, it's like, this is the seeds of that. This is the root of that. And it opened my heart to a kind of a compassion for, to recognize that the ways in which my mind gets all tied up in knots, I can't judge somebody else's mind getting all tied up in knots, because I can see how easy it is for my mind to get tied up in knots. And so that created a sense of connection with other beings. It created a sense of, like an odd way, it created a sense of community in my heart around the feelings of all of the messiness. And that for me was probably the early doorways into compassion and connection, is through looking at my own suffering and recognizing that it's the way everybody is, the way everybody's minds work similarly. That there's something about the way that the Buddha encouraged us to watch our experience that helps us to see that it's not just us. The other piece that's useful in terms of this exploration of cultivating compassion and equanimity for, you know, the suffering, being mindful of the suffering of others, is to begin to be kind of curious about what's in the way of being able to be connected with other suffering. What's in the way of that? So I mentioned some of the qualities that might come up earlier: pity, or a sense of aversion, a sense of fear, confusion. Those kinds of qualities can get in the way of that kind of connectedness of heart, of the feeling of compassion. Now those qualities, you know, the fear, the aversion, the pity, the confusion, those are all reactions. It's kind of like our system is, when there is suffering, you know, our system understands that as painful and we don't like it. And so we want to step away from it. And these are habitual ways that we've learned in our lives to step away from things, to deny that it's true, to flee away from it, to get angry and lash out at it, to blame somebody, to blame the world, to feel at fault ourselves. There's all kinds of ways in which we kind of put up a barrier so that we don't have to feel that suffering. And that, so this is another thing, that just to be really honest with ourselves, not try to force ourselves to step into that connection, to feel the suffering of others. But if there's a block there, there's something keeping us from feeling the suffering of others, that's worth exploring. And that's a way that our hearts begin. It's like, you know, so we look at what the relationship is. We look at that fear or that confusion or that denial, and recognize what's there, the beliefs that are there with it, the you know, the underlying sense of betrayal or a belief of some kind, so that we see how our minds are denying what's true, actually. Because I think all of those reactions are some way denying the truth of suffering. So those are a few thoughts about that. One more piece, and then I'll see if there's any comments or questions about or thoughts about this, other thoughts. In reflecting on the experience of others, you know, a piece I talked about, you know, using newspapers or, you know, stories that we read, you know, as you bring those in, you know, kind of like this is in one of the Mahayana traditions, there's a talk of exchanging self for other. And this is a useful kind of practice, you know, just to remind yourself, this might be me. You know, how might it be if this were me, you know, to really acknowledge that shared humanity, that we are not immune from this kind of suffering that we're seeing. So those are just a few reflections on exploring being more mindful of the suffering of others. Any thoughts or comments or reflections that brought up for you? And let me just make sure, I can make sure you unmute yourselves now. So yeah, so you can unmute yourselves if you want to say something. Or raise your hand. Yeah, Ali.
Hi, Andrea. Thank you. Would you say the practice of Lojong is the taking the suffering of others in? Is that the more progression of what you were describing, or is that like separate?
I think it. You know, I've not really done the Tibetan style of practice, the Mahayana styles of practice, but to me, it doesn't seem that different from what the Buddha talks about in terms of the development and cultivation of compassion. So I think they're different. We could say that they're different practices, and there's different ways in for different people. So, yeah, I mean, if it resonates for you to explore that kind of exchanging self and other, you know, that kind of taking in the suffering, I think there's that breathing in the suffering of others and breathing out ease and peace, you know, so that you're really doing that exchange. But I think also the exchanging self and others, the recognition, yes, that could be me. I think that's a powerful reflection in the mind. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Drake.
Hi, thank you very much. I was wondering if you think I always get tripped up over in the big mindfulness sutta where we're supposed to see these things internally and externally. Hmm. That's relevant to this sort of stuff.
That's great. I'm so glad you brought that up. It is relevant. You know, that's not specific to compassion, but it is relevant in terms of noticing what's happening internally, noticing what's happening externally. Although it's not completely clear what it means, the commentaries do mention noticing how others are. So, you know, in terms of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of breathing, you can kind of notice how other people's bodies are, how they're holding it, how they are. And there's a kind of, there can be an imputation of recognizing somebody else's suffering. So that is like noticing the mind states of others, you know, noticing how other people are. And we know these things by how they express it, right? You know, we see how people are, how they're engaged. And I've actually found this to be powerful when I've remembered to be, you know, almost like, you know, how I do mindfulness for myself. I notice, oh yeah, there's anger arising here. Yeah, oh, anger. That's what that feels like. That's what the experience of anger is internally. When I remember to recognize when somebody else is expressing something like that, oh, that's anger arising externally. It actually is helpful. You know, again, it helps the mind to remember this is an impersonal thing. And so likewise with suffering, well, an anger is a form of suffering. So, you know, and I think that that's a beautiful connection to recognize, because we feel, you know, when anger arises internally or any kind of reactivity, any mental reactivity arises internally, we can experience it or feel it as suffering. And then when we see and recognize, actually, oh, somebody else, they're experiencing frustration, that might help us to connect to the fact that that's suffering because we've experienced that as suffering. So that's a beautiful connection to that piece of the sutta. And it's an interesting one to play with. You know, oh yeah, I've done it actually even watching somebody do walking meditation, you know, stepping. It's kind of fun. So yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, Ik.
My question is around what will you suggest when there is a denial of my own suffering?
A denial of your own suffering. Is it an unawareness, or is there a kind of an awareness and a pushing away of it?
I think, yeah, pushing away of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so there is the recognition that it's suffering, but then there's a kind of a, I don't have time for this, or I shouldn't be feeling this, or something along those lines, potentially. So some kind of relationship of, you know, it sounds like an aversive kind of relationship to it. And I would say, It's really important to recognize that is happening. Sometimes it is an almost a defense mechanism, because sometimes as we become aware of our suffering, being aware of it almost like takes us into it, or takes us into the rabbit hole of it. And so sometimes that kind of pushing away is a kind of a defense mechanism, or a kind of a way to keep us from getting like overwhelmed by it. And so, you know, to hold that perspective sometimes can be useful to recognize, okay, well, there is this suffering, and there's a not wanting to see it happening. There's a kind of a sense of not being okay with being with it right now. And can that be okay? So can there be a little bit of compassion for yourself? So again, it's kind of working at it through the equanimity and compassion door, that's what's happening for you. If you could change it, if you could, you know, have that denial be gone, if you could have the suffering be gone, you might do that, but we often can't. And so sometimes we have to open to what is here. And so that might be having a heart that can stretch to hold, well, there's that suffering, and there's the not wanting to see it. That's what's happening. Can I be okay with that? Can I know that that's what's happening? Not deny that the mind is denying the suffering. So that's one way to explore. And for me, you know, that feels like a very respectful way to explore, because the denial or the resistance to the suffering is part of what your system is doing. That's part of what's happening for you. And so it's opening to that. Now you may want to explore the possibility of you know, kind of seeing, can I touch that? Can I recognizing that there is that denial? Can I kind of maybe like look at it a little bit from the side, just touch it really gently, that suffering, let myself like go in a little bit, see what happens. And then, you know, not force yourself to stay with it, not like try to dive into the middle of that suffering and you know, the denial or the resistance be, you know, be damned. It's like, you know, that is not helpful. But you might, with the holding of both, holding, yeah, there's resistance and there's this suffering. Maybe holding both, I can like let myself touch a little bit that suffering and then take some steps back from it. So that you're you know, you're kind of pushing the edge a little bit, but respecting that there is that resistance. And see what happens. You know, that maybe there's a little more capacity to touch into that suffering than you give yourself credit for. And some of that resistance can be habit. So it's worth respecting it, but also potentially, you know, just kind of like, can I like just touch that suffering just a little bit? And there's a lot more to say about that, but it's time to stop.